Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Real quick, this weekend, I'm going to be at Rick Bronson's House of Comedy in Bloomington, Minnesota, May 2nd to the 4th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Always a good time. Come on out, hang out, have a few laughs. Need them right now. And I just bought a car, and man, it was painful. I had one guy said, could you tell me on the phone, I'm talking to the guy, can you tell me a little something, you know, if the car is in good shape? Not a clue. Says, not a clue. Okay, this is what you're dealing with. Anyway, Rick Bronson's House of Comedy this weekend, May 2nd to the 4th. And my guest, Willie Geist, co-host of Morning Joe and the Today Show and Sunday Today. Really cool conversation. Great guy. Really interesting background. So I think you're going to enjoy it. And hopefully we'll see you guys in Minnesota. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show, or welcome first time. I'm the guy that hosts it. I'm very excited to have a guest on, someone that I've known and you've seen everywhere and see everywhere, who probably gets up way too early in the morning for any human being. And by the way, I just got to do a quick mention. Elizabeth, who works here at NBC, has been amazing to set this up.
She's amazing. Look at Liz. Liz, you want to talk or no?
You told me on the elevator to say that. And I said, no, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. my guest, Willie Geist, co-host of MSNBC's Morning Joe and host of Sunday Today with Willie Geist. I really like that show.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I was looking at your guest list. I'm a little intimidated now. You had Paul McCartney on your show?
I know. That was crazy.
How the hell did that happen?
He was at the Colbert Report.
Yeah.
And he had just done rehearsal and I was working there. And we're getting close to taping time, and I round the corner, and Paul McCartney is standing in the hallway with a little Colbert Report t-shirt, like tucked in with a belt, like a 12-year-old, leaning against the wall, like he's waiting for a bus, chewing gum and looking up at the ceiling, all alone. Like,
come on.
And you know, you're in this business. People, especially at that level, have a lot of people, handlers and managers. Not a human being around him.
Wow.
And my whole world slows down. It's like, oh my God, it's Paul McCartney. And you know, there's sort of a rule that I have in my head. You don't bother the guests, right? Unless I know them, then I'll go say hey. And I'm like, it's Paul McCartney, man. You gotta
make your move.
And he's alone. No,
one
he's
shot
like
at
a,
this.
He's like a gazelle on the Serengeti Plains, and I'm a lion. I'm gonna pounce. Anyway, so I don't want to make it about me.
That's incredible.
But I just went up to him and said, nice to meet you. I'm a huge fan. And I walk away. He goes, no, come back. He goes, what do you do? He goes, what's your name? I go, Paul Mercurio. He goes, oh, that's a good name, Paul. I'm like, great. Everybody's a comedian. And then it went from there. He was incredible.
Oh, that's
it was
so
incredible.
Cool.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm honored.
Thanks for doing this. Yeah. As I've been a big fan and really admire what you do. And by the way, we have a lot in common. You met your wife in sixth grade, and I met my wife in 12th grade.
Did you really?
And we've been together,
Okay, well, see, we met in sixth grade. We were friends, and we didn't start dating till 11th grade. So we're about the same.
You go.
In terms of dating, it's probably been the same. We actually went to college together too.
Wow.
Yeah, we went to Vanderbilt in Nashville.
Yeah.
And back then, it was a little easier to get into than it is today. That's
no,
why I went
on,
to Vanderbilt.
That's a, good,
that's a true story. That's not false humility. But my wife really, she got in and she really wanted to go to University of Virginia.
Oh.
And they waitlisted her. She didn't get in. So then she called me. She said, hey, we're going to college together. I said, what? But it worked out. And then actually after we graduated college, I moved to Atlanta to work for CNN.
Yeah.
She moved to Boston.
Yeah.
Had her own career. And we broke up in our 20s and then found each other.
Oh,
again.
Wow.
Well, so my wife worked well.
So my wife and I are from Rhode Island, not just outside of Boston. And when she said we're going to go to college together, was part of you like, excited, but parties like, oh.
Yeah, well, I think we both were.
You were like that, very into the relationship was pretty tight at that
moment. No, I think we both were like, oh, I thought this was like a high school relationship. Does this mean we're going to date in college now, too? And we tried not to at the beginning, like, no, we're in college now. And the school wasn't big enough. We were running in the same circle. So we did date in college and then broke up after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we met on a high school ski trip.
Oh, really?
She was a junior. I was a senior. And I kind of hung out with one group of kids and she was like with another group.
Yeah.
So we didn't, and she was a year below me. So of course I couldn't even deal with her. She was an underclassman, these peasants. And then I'm seeing her, I'm like, man, she's cute.
Yeah.
But she was with this dude and I didn't know who the guy was. And I thought it was like her boyfriend. So I, for the next 2 days on the ski trip, I was this guy. Hey guys, what are you doing? Like I was completely in their space the whole time. Turned out it was like her old close just male friend from her neighborhood.
Well, how are you going to know that?
And then I asked her out on a date and one thing led to another. Fantastic. So, yeah.
I had the problem of we tried to date freshman year in high school, Christine and I, but then she discovered guys with cars. And I was gone. Until
hilarious.
Junior year when I got my license. She always was dating the juniors and the seniors. And
yeah,
everybody. So I had to wait my turn.
She's no dummy.
Yeah,
she knows.
She's smart.
You started in sports CNN.
Yeah.
Producer, reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Did the interest in sports come from your great-grandfather, who's a professional hockey player?
Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah. Herbie Lewis.
Detroit Red Wings.
My great-grandfather played for the Red Wings in the 30s. He was the captain of the team.
This is when they didn't wear helmets. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Jesus.
And by the way, including the goalies. Have you ever seen some of the pictures of just the scarred faces on these guys? It's like horror films.
I had Malarchuk on my show.
Oh, my God.
You should listen to it. He got his neck sliced by a skate. Oh, my God.
That's that piece of video, you can only watch that once.
But then that's the tip of the iceberg. It so depresses him. He tries to kill himself and he puts a bullet in his head, but he doesn't kill himself, but it's lodged in his head.
What?
Yeah. And then he had a drug and alcohol problem, but he's all better now.
That's a full 30 for 30.
So
my great grandfather, Herbie Lewis, won back to back Stanley Cups, 36 and 37. Mm. He's in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Jesus.
And was like a legend of his time. And there are these. You go up, I met him, you know, I think I was probably 8 or 9 when he died.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a chance to really, really know him as I got older, but
he was retired at that time.
Yeah. And he had this, like, now that I'm older, you go back and read this. He was an icon in Detroit.
It's amazing.
There are these incredible pick photographs. You can find them on Google Images, actually, where he's in the locker room, still in his uniform, with the Stanley Cup in one hand and a cigar in his mouth.
Wow.
That is a guy on top of the world.
Yeah, exactly.
And related to that guy.
That's unbelievable.
So I didn't get any of his hockey skills, but I did grow up playing sports. I played football and basketball.
Yeah,
baseball,
I saw that. Yeah.
All the things you play growing up. And then I think what happened was I love sports, but also I got to Vanderbilt and it was SEC level. I was like, I'm going to walk on the football team. And then I saw like Alabama and Tennessee get off the bus. And I was like, I think I'll join a fraternity after all.
I'm going to do the chess club.
Just for my own health and well-being. So I worked for the student paper there because I wanted to stay close to sports.
Oh,
and
I was curious if it came from your dad.
Yeah, the journalism part came from my dad. And then just my love of sports was that I had played and kind of still wanted to be close to it somehow.
Yeah.
And so I wrote for the paper at Vanderbilt and still was called the Vanderbilt Hustler. Which is not as kinky as it sounds. It's just a standard student newspaper.
She needs to be a meeting about that.
Yeah,
that
I think
title.
So. So I wrote, I covered everything from, the golf team and the gymnastics and the baseball and football when I got older.
Would you get, was there a professor that oversaw the paper? Would you give you all guidance? Or?
There was, but it was pretty down and dirty at that point. Now they have this at Vanderbilt, this beautiful student media center and all these things. We were in the basement of there was the cafeteria and then we were down in the basement the mail room. Oh, there's nothing in there. And we're all up late trying to, with the razor blades, piecing the paper together, get it out. But what a great time and what a great experience.
Is there anything that you learned or picked up, Ben, that was at least a small basis or a foundation for what you do now?
I think writing, for sure, because
just doing it and getting in.
Yeah, you go in at 18 years old and you think you know how to write, you don't know how to write.
Yeah.
And there were really smart, great writers there who were my editors.
Yeah.
And they'd say, you don't need that. But I love that sentence. I don't care if you love that sentence. It's no good. You don't need it. So I think that was a good, learning experience. And it's funny, we had on 2 days ago on Morning Joe, Tyler Kepner, who's a baseball writer for the New York Times, national baseball writer. He's got a book out, and he and I went to Vanderbilt at the same time, both wrote for the paper together. And now to sit together 25 years later on
amazing.
The set of Morning Joe and talk about his book was kind of a cool, surreal thing.
You know, you talk about your writing, and when you came over to MSNBC, you had the morning slot after Don Imus' show, and you went to Phil Griffin, the head of MSNBC, you wanted to sort of showcase your writer's voice.
Yeah.
And so you wanted what I read is termed a warm-up, something.
Yeah.
And tell that story and tell why you wanted that. I thought it's really interesting.
Well, I'd done Morning Joe at that point for a couple of years.
Right.
On a panel show, which I loved, and co-hosted with Joe and Mika. And, you know, I was seen probably then as, you know, the sidekick who'd like chime in with a joke or whatever, bring some information to the conversation. And I thought, like, how do you stand out a little bit and show the other things you can do? And I thought, I need to do something where I can show me standing there alone.
Yeah.
And so I bugged Phil Griffin, who's still our president, long enough where he finally said, all right, you can have 5:30 a.m. and I can't hire any new people. You got no money. And I said, I'll take it. You know, you got to take it. And if they give you something, you take it. So,
well, you said, the quote you said is all things lead to others. Right?
Yeah. And I think that's true.
What do you mean by
that? Well, I just mean that. So I did that show, which was called Way Too Early. We were singing a meeting. What should we call this show?
I really like that title, by the way.
And by the way, it was Morning Joe producers, my friends, so I got to come in a little earlier because I literally couldn't get any staff.
Yeah.
And so they came and helped me, and we're sitting around like, what should this be called? And my buddy's like, oh my God, this is way too early. What are we doing? And so I was like, that's the show. Still on the door, actually, Way Too Early.
Did Jesse work on that? Jesse
Rodriguez helped.
He worked on that?
Yep, for sure.
That's so great.
And so what I meant by that was, so then it's just me hosting that half hour at 5:30 outside the context of Morning Joe. And so people watching, but also people in the building see, oh, he's standing there delivering the news, and then he's interviewing somebody by himself. And sometimes you'd have to show people.
Well, you do, because there's label. I think our society labels people, and in this business especially, you know, I mean, technically I'm a comedian, but I actually, and I think some people think, well, you know, I just lay around till 4 a.m. drink and then get up and like maybe write a joke and then go to OTB and bet, right? Like, but you actually have other skill sets.
Yeah.
And you have to like put it right in front of them.
Yes.
Because they can't, and you know, they got their own stuff. They're busy. I get it. But you really do have to showcase yourself.
And they see you in a different context. So when I think I had been doing Way Too Early for about a year. When Jim Bell, who's now the executive producer of Fallon, was the executive producer of the Today Show, who I knew a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are up early and they got the TV on and MSNBC's on. Like, what's that guy doing?
Yeah.
And they turn up the volume once in a while, then they watch it a few days and they watch it a few weeks and months. And he calls and says, hey, I need you to come over and fill in. And next thing you know,
at the Today Show,
wow. You're sitting next to Meredith Vieira hosting the Today Show.
I love Meredith.
How the hell did this happen?
Yeah, Meredith, she's a friend. She's been on the show. She's great.
She's the best.
And by the way, she's got the dirtiest mouth.
Oh my God. People don't realize.
It's the best.
People don't realize.
People hear the thing that we did
because
we've known each other. We're both from Rhode Island.
Uh-huh.
And I've worked on shows that she's been on and stuff. We just got friends. They hear the podcast. He goes, what did you give her? Was she drunk when she did your podcast? I go, no. She goes, that's really Meredith.
And by the way, she busts balls worse than any guy I've ever met.
Yeah.
Like talk about locker room. She's a tomboy.
And she's not on camera. She's like jeans, sneakers.
Oh, yeah. I remember she said, you know, it's your first show. And you go, okay, I don't want to say the wrong thing to Meredith. And she was very sweet.
Like,
made me comfortable.
The best, yeah.
And I'd written out I hand wrote out my notes and questions for a guest that was coming on. And she said, I may have the quote not exactly right, but she said, those are the fucking scribblings of a serial killer. And it like,
that's,
and it, she did that on purpose.
Yeah.
And I know why she did it. And it worked.
Yeah. Took
and
the tension.
Oh, okay.
Away.
I'm in.
Yeah.
She's giving me shit.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, how cool is
she's
that?
Incredible.
How sweet was that and generous?
She hosted the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yeah.
She would personally write a thank you note to every single guest on the show. I mean, literally like a nice card, and she would write it herself and then make sure that they were given to the people. Like just a real human being. And she just, she's so funny. Anyway.
No, but that, but she's one of her, maybe more than anyone, but of people in our business who like taught me that just by example, that personal touch is important. I do that too with our show, the Sunday show.
You don't have notes.
I reach out to the publicist because, you know, they took time out of their day and they came on my show, and I'm grateful they did it.
Yeah.
And I hope they had a good time and it was good for our show and good for whatever.
Well, the thing
I
like about it, and I noticed, and then you talked about it, and you said you've talked about it. You don't do notes. You do it at a bar or restaurant, and you said it, this is your quote. TV interview is inherently an unnatural thing. You never sit down or wait for the lights and countdown and someone says go. So why would I have notes?
Yeah.
And I noticed you didn't.
Yeah.
but it never rang true to me until I, you know, read up a little bit, and I think it's totally right. Like, it makes a big difference.
Well, it's what, like, we're doing right now. Yeah. This feels like you and I are just sitting in a bar talking, right? Because yeah. And that's a credit to you, but also it's sort of the format of TV, you know, you got to wait for the cameras to be set, and the yeah. lights got to be moved, and that's not, I can't get rid of the cameras yet. I don't have to figure that yeah, one out. Exactly. But I want it to just feel like you and I are talking right now, yeah. which is like we're sitting. So that's why I definitely take it out of the TV studio. Yeah. That's not natural. You know, there used to be a thing, and there still is, where you just get a hotel room. Like, have you ever had a conversation with someone where we pulled the furniture out of a hotel room yeah. and sat across from each other? No, that's not how you talk
when
to
I
people.
See that setup, yeah. I'm waiting for the person to reveal they did something illegal. Or right. took steroids.
Right, right.
If I saw that, I'm like, Willie Geist, he took steroids. That's got to right. be why this is set up
yeah.
like this.
The next step is you're in silhouette. Yeah, they don't want to see your face.
And then you're crying.
Yeah. I said that in one of our first meetings for Sunday today. I said, just want to establish something. I will never sit in a hotel room with one orchid behind me because they always have to go find a flower to dress it up somehow. So, yeah, I just want to make it natural.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing wrong with having notes. And I always say when people ask me that, like on Morning Joe, I'm interviewing a politician or something. I got notes all over the
well,
place
because yeah,
I
want to
get a quote or a date or whatever. Yeah. But on these conversations, like we had this week was Kit Harington from Game of Thrones, yeah. Jon Snow. And so to me, the job is the days before that is research.
Yeah.
And, like what you do, you know, yeah. like you know everything about the person.
You know it, and then you throw it out and trust it's going to yeah. come back.
And also, yeah. you know, I sort of have an outline in my head yeah, of where thing. It goes.
Yeah.
And maybe a bunch of the interviews gobbled up by the second item
yeah.
in the interview, and then you don't get to seven,
and sometimes eight,
nine,
you don't necessarily okay. start in a chronological order.
No.
I usually try not to, just to make it a little more interesting. And yeah. I also found that if you take the time to do the research,
yeah.
and they know it, like I had Christian Chenoweth on, they like, are so appreciative
totally.
And then they open up, and I don't do it as a manipulation tactic no. to get them to open up. It's just like, if you're going to take the time, I do this A, because I have a personal interest. So I just want to know anyway.
Yes.
And if you're going to take the time to give me your busy time, I should at least, you know, return the favor. And
that to
try.
Me, what you just said is the key. You actually have to be interested in the person.
Yeah.
And we're lucky on Sunday, cause you're only doing it once a week. You can really like get somebody
oh,
who
yeah.
like who I want to I actually want to know
yeah.
these things I'm asking are not from a list that yeah. someone gave me. I'm just interested in that your life is interesting
right
in
well
me
you mentioned and, Kit because he was just on the Late Show with Colbert for
yeah.
7 minutes
yeah.
and the reason you know I'm a comedian, it's the law, I'm supposed to have a podcast and but when I started to do it I'm like I don't want to do like three comedians sitting around because that's going to feel like
right.
morning FM radio and
right,
I want to do
right,
that right
right.
And so anyway, all I wanted to do was talk to somebody because I see these people, these amazing journalists, artists, writers, for 7 minutes, and you never get to know more about them than that.
I know.
And so I'm when, happy you're doing the long form.
Really, the Sunday show was born for me out of doing interviews that I enjoyed on the Today Show and elsewhere, but was also frustrated by because they were 5 minutes,
yeah.
and then we got to go, okay, tell
yeah.
me about the movie, and
yeah.
then this other thing I saw you put on Instagram,
yeah.
have a good day. So this was, now we get 8 minutes on Sunday, which then you get greedy and you go, wait a minute, I only got 8 minutes. And that was this big interview. So
yeah.
that's why we started a year ago, the Sunday Sit Down podcast, which is just truly clipping the top and the bottom of our full interview.
That's great.
So it's 45 minutes or
that's
it's
great.
An hour, whatever it is. And you just post it up and put it on.
Where can people hear that?
It's iTunes, Apple Podcasts.
Okay, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's called Sunday Sit Down.
So on occasion, I go on the panels on cable news. And by the way, that's another thing. I feel like almost all the time they're over staffed. There are too many people. And so you just get into something. Everybody's
yeah.
going to get their 10 or 15 or 20 seconds, and then you have to move on.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have one or two people, you can really dive deep. Where is the line on Morning Joe? I mean, there's this line of like journalism and commentary,
yeah.
right? And I think Morning Joe and a lot of stuff on MSNBC and a lot of CNN everywhere.
Yeah.
Is that blend. So as a
yeah.
journalist, where do you strike that line? Where do you go, okay, I'm crossing into a line of commentary and I don't
yeah.
want to go there. Or I want to pull back.
Yeah, I think what's been interesting over the last few years, there's always been defined, okay, this is the news part of
yeah.
the division. This is the opinion part. So the opinion comes in prime time and during the day you get straight news.
Right.
But over the last couple of years, I think that's been blurred to a great extent.
Yeah.
And you have ostensibly straight news anchors dropping their opinion, rolling their eyes, yeah. you know, doing yeah. the cute chyrons to yeah. show how snarky everyone is. And I think for me on Morning Joe, we make no secrets about Joe has his opinions and Mika as well. Yeah. So I try to the extent I can to be the viewer at home, which is to say, what does the viewer want to know about this conversation? What's the question they're asking? Because we're so deep in the weeds and yeah, a lot of stuff. Sometimes yeah. you say, what the hell are we talking about yeah. here? Who's that guy? What's that guy? So I don't, you'll hear my opinion sometimes, but I'm not going to go on a
rant. I noticed that.
I don't deliver screeds. I mean,
I feel like you pull it back to the middle a little bit
sense. Yeah, I try to present, here's what people are saying about this. Mm. You know, this is the case, whether you believe it or not, what progressives are making. And here's what the conservatives are saying.
Yeah.
Which of those wins the day. So it's not like a both sides-y thing, but I think information is still important. So if you have a conversation that's pure opinion, I try to drop in information
yeah.
and data and things that help fuel the conversation yeah. a little bit. But you're never going to have me like look into camera for 3 minutes and wagging yeah. my finger. And
you know, I had Mika on the podcast yeah. and she said something that I really admired. We were talking about the Me Too movement and empowerment of women, you know, which she does.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm upset with a lot of female journalists right now because they're sitting there and they're journalists. And then all of a sudden we're hearing about their own personal stories and personal lives and this and that. And that's not their role. Yeah. And I gave her a lot of credit for saying that as a woman and as a journalist, and you know, that's touchy ground, you know?
Yeah. I feel like for a lot of people, the Trump administration and President Trump himself may have given them license, they feel in some way, to say things they wouldn't yeah. otherwise say. Like yeah. they believe like this crisis is so great that I have to sort of drop my veil of objectivity.
I also think it's an extension of social media. It's empowered all of us yeah, to have an opinion right. anytime, anywhere, ever, when, however. And frankly, we shouldn't be all voicing our opinion all the time.
I know.
Including me.
I agree. And the thing that gets me is I'll see a great reporter, truly a great New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Post reporter, and they've got the piece, a straight news piece on the front page. And you go, okay, that was an interesting piece. They broke news. And you go on Twitter and they reveal themselves completely yeah. about who they are and their opinion about things.
Yeah.
And I know it's probably unreasonable at this point, like the genie's out of the bottle.
Yeah,
that everyone's
is.
Opinion is yeah. everywhere. But I guess in some fantasy world, I wish that we had people who I didn't know anything about where they stood on politics.
Yeah.
And I could just trust that what they were saying was fair. And
right.
I think to me, the key word, and I try to employ this with myself, is objectivity is a false idea, which is to say we all have subjectivity,
oh,
we
yeah.
all have biases, but you can always be fair, you know?
That's a really good
and
way
of
putting
it. You shouldn't root for an outcome.
Yeah.
You should just observe what's happening and ask questions and make conclusions based on what you see in a fair way.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the pendulum swing, I think, too far in one direction. I was curious what you thought of this. Like, when I worked on The Daily Show, you know, you could make fun of a liberal candidate, let's say, and yeah. the liberals could laugh at it, and you can make fun of the conservative, and the conservative.
Right.
Nobody, and humor is important. You know, humor yeah. is a gauge of where the country is in terms of their point of view and their beliefs and their passions. And I just think it's swung. I mean, there is no middle ground in this country. And I'm not going after the Trumps. I'm not going after the Bernie Sanders or it's everybody. How do you experience it? Because you've been in journalism for a while now, so yeah. you've had the seat swing.
Yeah.
And how do you deal with that? And how do you see it ever swinging back to some semblance of normalcy?
That's, you know, it's a question I talk about with people and ask myself, like, Is there a return to some level of normalcy whenever in 2 years or 6 years, if Donald
yeah.
Trump's not president anymore? Like, how do you, you're not suddenly, if Donald Trump leaves office or when he leaves office, you're not suddenly going to go back to the way it was or whatever that yeah. means.
And
exactly.
In fairness to him, I think it was even before he showed up.
For sure.
I think he heightened it.
Yeah, I'm not even blaming him. I'm just saying he exposed all
yep.
and gave license to people on the right to
yeah.
say what they really think about people on the left and in the media and everywhere else and Hollywood and people on the left to say what they really mm. feel about people of faith and people who believe abortion is is murder, all these things. Mm. I think, I don't know how exactly we come back from that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not fully. I hope we can just have a a more civil society than we have right now, because it's kind of like there's nothing too extreme to say anymore. You can say the worst thing that comes to your mind about Donald Trump, or the worst thing that comes to your mind about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah.
And it's okay with your constituency on Twitter or whoever your group is.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just, maybe I'm naive and old fashioned, but it's just, it's ugly. And I wish we didn't talk this way to each other. But the one thing that does hearten me is the voices that are amplified and sometimes focused on too much on Twitter or cable news even are the loudest and most extreme. And so
that worries me.
It's not a pure reflection of who we are and where the country is. And that I take heart in that.
Yeah. But I wish those people had more of a voice.
Yeah.
You know, the moderates on both sides of the aisle, whether the conservatives and liberals, they tend to be marginalized by these extreme, extreme voices that, you know, get a lot of Twitter followers.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is now you see presidential candidates having to react to the extreme voices on Twitter. So in other words, there are all these litmus test questions of like, do you support the Green New Deal? And if you don't, you're not one of us. Oh, yeah, okay, I support the Green New Deal. Medicare for all. Yes, that's okay.
Well, that's what Obama referred to last week.
He talked about
the firing squad.
Firing squad.
Right.
Yeah, he's warned about that.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think when you see candidates, even Biden's had to do it where they're coming out and they're leading with an apology for everything they've ever done or said. I'm sorry I voted that way on that bill in 2004. And I'm sorry I said that thing. And 1996. It's kind of exhausting. It's like let's move forward and who's got the best ideas.
What is your process for Morning Joe? Like, what time are you up? I mean, you obviously have to keep your eye on everything that's going on before you go to bed and when you get up, you know, especially with this administration where this stuff's happening.
Yeah.
How does your day work in that way?
So I have a daughter 11, son 9. Once they're in bed, then I kind of go in and I spend an hour just before I go to sleep, because these things have so many machinations over the course of a day.
Oh, yeah.
Barr said this and somebody else reacted that way. Trump said that. So yes, you follow it all day on your phone. You never get away from it.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I try to settle out a little bit and be like, okay, here's what's actually was important about today and what we'll talk about tomorrow.
Plus, you
want
to stay married and spend like 5 minutes with your wife.
Staring into your phone.
You remember me? Did I go to college with you? Did you have a phone? You didn't have a car in high school, did you? Oh, no, you were a loser. You didn't.
No, I did not have a car in high school, but that's another conversation. So, I do that before I go to bed. And then I wake up at about 4:30.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll have emails overnight from producers who even distill it down further.
Right.
Here's what we got. Here are the sound bites we're looking at to spark the conversation. But really, it is, given our show and the unpredictability of Morning Joe over 3 hours of mostly ad lib, you don't know what's going to come up.
Yeah.
You know, a guest throws something on the table and you've got to know what he's talking about. Or a guest talks about an op-ed. You got to know what she's talking about.
You got to know a little bit about a lot of things.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. And a little more than like passing cocktail party now. Right. You know, you've got to be well-versed in a lot of things, but I enjoy it. You know, it's like people ask me like, God, getting up at 4 a.m. for 12 years now. And I always say, and I still believe it, if you didn't love where you were going at 4:30 in the morning, you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You couldn't get out of bed for 12 years. You'd just say, no, I'm not doing this.
I know radio hosts, they have the morning, shift the same thing.
And
like,
I've never felt that. Like, look, it's not great when the alarm first goes off at 4:30. What the hell?
It's dark.
What is going on? I went to bed 5 minutes
ago. It's the darkness. It's waking up in the darkness.
It is. And knowing it's going to be dark for like 3 more hours after you woke up. But once you get in the shower and you start thinking about what we're talking about today, it's exciting and fun again.
And you got great platforms too. Do you, your dad is Bill Geist, a great journalist, CBS Sunday Morning, very funny. And there's a story of you would go on the set as a kid.
Yeah. Sunday Morning.
Yeah. Did you, I always find that talking to people, there's something in the childhood that sort of is a precursor to what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Obviously you're not sitting there at that age saying, I want to do this, but what stood out for you when you would go there or you first went there that stayed with you?
Yeah, that was back when my dad would go in, he had a piece on and they would have him throw to it live.
Yeah.
So he'd be in the studio early in the morning and he'd go in. And I laugh about it now because I think the show's on at 8, but he would like, that was so early for him. He'd like, we lived in New Jersey, he'd go into the city and sleep at the Holiday Inn next to CBS the night before. And now I'm like, wait, because you had to be there at 7 in the morning? You know, it's absurd. But he did. And some I'd go with him sometimes. And Charles Kuralt was hosting the show then.
Yeah.
And it was still old school. This is in the 80s. Old school, old CBS TV. And Kuralt would, in commercials, he'd smoke a cigarette. And I mean, you're thinking like, this is great.
I'm a Red Sox fan. I see pictures of Carl Yastrzemski in the dugout smoking cigarettes between innings.
You ever seen the one of Len Dawson at halftime of the first Super Bowl? He's got a Fresca and a cigarette.
No, you
got to Google it. It's incredible. You think he's like, oh, he's putting it on. No, he needed a smoke at halftime just to calm his nerves a little bit.
The Super Bowl is stressful.
Anybody got a lung dart? So he would like smoke cigarettes in the break, and he'd see that cloud of smoke, and he'd sort of crush it out as they 3, 2, 1, welcome back. It's so cool.
Yeah.
And I think like my dad never sat me down and said, this would be a good business for you. Yeah. But he was a newspaper reporter and columnist before that.
Very funny.
Yeah, funny. I just saw that he liked his job, you know, and then he got to go meet people and travel places. And he was like the interesting dad in our town, you know,
cool
like,
job,
oh, who'd you meet and where'd you go? You know?
Yeah.
And he seemed happy. He liked what he was doing. He didn't come home, throw a briefcase down and wait for his dinner.
Subconsciously that all washes over you. Yeah.
Yeah. The older I get, the more I think about it. I think I probably took a lot of that in without even hearing it.
I know you got a busy day. We're going to wrap in a second, but there's a couple of things about your dad that's really funny. First of all, you were in camp and writing letters home, and you said that's when you showed that you had the ability for humor.
Yeah.
But there's a great story about he went to a camp fair to find the camp for you to go to.
Yeah.
And it tells people he wanted you to get more outdoorsy kind of.
Yeah, yeah, right. I was into basketball and sports. My parents said I should go to like one of those camps up in the woods.
Yeah, learn how
to
canoe and fish.
Exactly. So there's one camp whose name I'm not going to say because it was a wonderful place.
Yeah.
But they went to the Javits Center to the camp fair.
Which I didn't know existed.
I didn't either. Maybe they still have it. But like that's a big investment to go, like, take a Sunday and go to the camp fair.
For a guy who doesn't want to get up for an 8 o'clock in the morning job, especially.
Exactly. And they found one that, like, it looked good, but it was significantly less expensive than the other ones. And they were like, that's our winner. Yeah. So it turned out, my dad hadn't read the fine print, that not that there's anything at all wrong with this, and it turned out to be a fine place, but it was a place where sort of a rehab almost.
Juvenile offenders
were the counselors. And so I was up in the woods with a bunch of guys who were still not quite reformed, you know? So there was
all right, we're going to teach these kids to swim, and then we're going to take the tires off of that car.
They had bicycles. I remember they had bicycles, and these guys got in a fight, and they slashed each other's bike tires. And then one of the guys was sleeping with the nurse at the camp. But the other guy liked the nurse, so they were in a fight, and you'd go, like, you'd skin your knee playing baseball, and you'd go to the pillbox where they had Band-Aids, and the door was always locked because she's in there with the guys, the juvenile delinquents.
And Willie calls home, Dad, I want to come home. Why, are you homesick? No, I'm frightened for my life. Everybody has a knife.
It was. Yeah, I learned how to, you know, make a shiv. That was the big skill we
you
had
learned
at
something.
Camp. Yeah.
You learned something that you could use outdoors.
Right. But it's actually like, it was, I think I was only there for 2 weeks. So it was fine.
Yeah.
And I was never in harm's way. But it was like, I got home and my dad was like, oh, that's why it was half the price of all the other ones. But it was a great place, and everyone.
So now that you're a dad, you learn don't send your kid to a discount.
Exactly, and now I find the most expensive one just to make sure.
God. So, you know, and just to wrap up real quick, you wrote a book with your dad, about talking and the talk, and I got to have the talk with my son at some point.
Well, I never had the talk. That was the idea of that book with my dad called Good Talk Dad, because we never had the talk.
Well, you say you would have been scarred for life or something.
Oh, yeah. He's like, I wasn't going to have that talk with you. I think he tried to, I remember he tried to like introduce it once, and we were watching the Yankees in the 80s, and like Don Mattingly's up. He's like, what do you know about? second, I just looked at him, and then he just said, like, Steve Balboni's up next. Why don't you go grab us a couple more Cokes? That was the end of it. But yeah, I think I'll be better at it than my dad, but I'm not ready at 9 to have that conversation.
I think it's young. Yeah, I gotta step up. My dad was just like blue collar Italian guy. He barely talked. He wasn't going to be, he's like, I don't know, paint the house. I don't know, like figure it out, you know? So,
but meanwhile, my daughter who's 11, like she somehow knows everything. So my wife did have a talk with her because
a little
like,
more mature sooner women, girls.
I think in general, that's true. Yeah. But she knew like, she was sort of telling my wife everything. Like, how do you know this stuff? She's like, well, I saw Pitch Perfect and Mean Girls. And then I'm like, okay, we got to fill in some blanks here.
Yeah, exactly. We got to start monitoring what you're watching.
Exactly.
It's great talking to you.
You too, Paul. Yeah, thanks for coming
by. Do this
by.
Again sometime.
Have Absolutely.
You, come on. We have so much we could talk about. Sunday Today with Willie Geist, MSNBC co-host Morning Joe, little show out there that maybe some of you have heard of. And the podcast
Sunday
is
Sit Down Podcast.
Sunday Sit Down Podcast. You can get that everywhere. Thanks for the time, man. Great to have
Thanks,
you on.
Thanks, Paul. Good All to right. see you, man.
All right. There you go. Willie Geist. Awesome, dude. And please, if you get a second, come on out. Rick Bronson's House of Comedy, May 2nd to the 4th. Go online for tickets. Hope you can make it.